Welcome to the Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Moss Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
And welcome to another Saturday episode of the Wretched Hive Podcast. Ray, Dave, and Steve here to break down episode one of Marvel's What If.
That is the loudest intro we've ever had.
I know.
It was last week
we couldn't hear the intro, and now I can't hear Steve talking as the intro should be fading to black slowly.
Fixed the audio issues we have plagued the Saturday show. Before we get into episode 208, guys, and What If, that I cannot wait to talk about this, but big announcement on last weekend's show that I flew solo. I announced.
I was wondering if I missed something or not, because I saw the episode drop and I was like, I thought nobody could record last weekend. What happened?
Yeah, I got motivated and I had a big announcement that I want to make sure you guys know about also, letting all our listeners know. The Wretched Hive Hotline, we all know what it is. It's 562-455-4483, is now a text line. You can text message the show, area code 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. That's H-I-V-E, in case you can't spell hive.
You're goddamn right. Yeah.
And you can text the show, and we will text you back. So hit us up with a text. You know, no one uses the phones. Anyone who calls anybody, except if your name is Scott Ivansky, then maybe you call somebody.
When you say we will text you back, you pretty much mean you will text you. Back because yeah. I'm happy to put this on my phone, but
maybe we can talk offline about how to do that. I can set that up for you.
I think Greg was also looking for a legal disclaimer there. If you receive a text from the Wretched Hive Podcast over the next couple of weeks, no participation or comment from Greg Lent is implied in said text, and he assumes no legal responsibility for the liabilities therein. Ditto for me, by the way.
If there's a Venmo request for like books or tuition or something like that, that is strictly coming from Steve Baldwin, not anybody else.
If someone is identifying themselves as a Nigerian prince, that is not me.
That's a great point. Can someone take our and copy our number and use it to text? I don't know.
Well, thanks for putting that out in the world, Steve. What if somebody stole our phone number and spoofed it?
God damn it, Steve. This is a wretched hive of scum and villainy. It's in the goddamn name. Why are you putting this out there in the world?
But that's true. I did get the phone number for the show off of the bathroom stall in the actual wretched hive of scum and villainy. So anything's possible, I suppose. We figured out in the last episode, to digress a little bit further, the reason that Scott never text messages anyone, he calls everybody, is because his phone is actually one of those old Pac Bell phones. It's like got a corded headset, and he somehow has wired it to the wireless, you know, like AT&T network. So he literally, it's a rotary dial. He can't text.
If there was a way for Karen to actually do that, I'm sure that would be a thing in their house. I am 150% positive that Karen would rather have a rotary phone in her house versus every cell phone she's got in her in her possession.
I don't know if she'd give up every phone she has, but I guarantee she'd give up Scott's phone to have a rotary phone in the house.
Fair enough. I accept.
All right.
Sounds great, Greg.
All right, let's get going with it.
I'm just so happy about the soundboard thing.
Thanks, kid.
I am. I got my soundboard back. I'm so excited. Guys, we're not here to talk about Scott or cell phones or anything like that. We're actually here to talk about Marvel's What If Season 1, Episode 1 of Marvel's What If is titled What If Captain Carter Were the First Avenger on Disney Plus, initially dropped on Wednesday.
Wednesdays are the new Fridays now for Disney. Everything's going to be premiering on Wednesdays now.
Well, I will just throw out, there's one thing that's occurred to me that I like about the Wednesday drop date for the Marvel shows, and that is that Wednesday is traditionally new comic book day.
Ah, okay.
So I like that.
That would have been August 11th. Wednesday, August 11th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's great. So what I love about it is it's midweek. I've got a show to look forward to kind of break up the week. you know, I get home. It's a serial show. It's released every week. So it's not, you know, there's nothing to binge. I really like that they're kind of getting back to that, and it's something to look forward to on a regular basis. So really, really fun to have it on Wednesdays. The Disney Plus description of Marvel's What If is this. What If flips the script on the MCU by reimagining events from the films in unexpected ways. And I just, I have a question. So I've got my list of non-comic book guy questions for you. I've got them lined up. I've got them teed up, because you guys have to, again, walk me through some of this Marvel stuff.
You're in the right place. You're absolutely in the right place.
Much like Ryan Johnson, we will hold your hand, Steve.
First of all, the title of episode one, when Steve Rogers is seriously injured, Peggy Carter becomes the world's first super soldier. Don't you think they're burying the lead a little bit here? I mean, every other Marvel TV show that has rolled out on Disney Plus sort of like unravels like this beautiful mystery, this mystery box. It's like a J.J. Abrams mystery box. You don't know what's inside until you've completely opened it. And with this, it's like, okay, we know what's going to happen. I mean, Dave, were you disappointed at all in that? Like, you know exactly what's going to happen just by hearing the title of the episode.
I was not, but I'm also super familiar with the convention and the formula of What If. That's a comic book series that dates back to the 1970s that Marvel has published on and off to explore these kind of alternate turning points in Marvel comic publishedom, or just weird ass ideas that they have from time to time. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much the difference between a What If story to me and the other stories that we've seen is that these other series are all very serialized. And they do unfold a little bit like a mystery box. You know, we just know it's the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Something's going to happen and it has to unfold. What If is not terribly serialized. These are all self-contained episodes. So they kind of lay out specifically, here's the story we're going to tell you. And the magic is in how they tell the story. And that's why I enjoyed this so much. I think it's a very challenging line to hoe as a writer, in that you have to hit all these beats that are familiar, but you have to make them seem different. And that is 150% what they did with this episode. It was a basic beat for beat alternate retelling of Captain America, the First Avenger, completely different story. And at the same time, lines up on all the big basic plot points almost perfectly. Greg, do you think I'm off base on that? Or
No, I 100% agree with you. The conceit of the What If series, comic book series, if you've read any of them, and I'm not teasing you because you haven't, Steve, but the reason why it makes sense to us is all of the What If books were all pretty much one shots. I mean, the series was just called What If, and each story it was very rare that an issue, you know, went over more than when one of the stories went over more than one issue. So typically self-contained to one issue. And the main theme of that particular issue was always summarized directly on the cover page. So they were always spoiling what it was, because you know the story of Captain America, but what if Steve Rogers was not Captain America? What if, you know, what if Peggy Carter was Captain America instead? And it always spells that out for you. And then, like Dave said, it's just exploring what you know, not so much from a different point of view, just if alternate events took place, you know, one little change in how something, you know, stepping on the butterfly back in the, you know, back in the Stone Ages changes so much down the road. So there's all that, there's still that familiarity that's there.
That serendipitous sort of chain of events that occurs that following this change. And in this episode, it was Peggy Carter just deciding to stay in the room, right? The throwaway line from the movie, Agent Carter, don't you think you'd be more comfortable in the booth? And in this episode, a more assertive Peggy declines and decides to stay in the room. So Greg, was this storyline with Peggy Carter told in the comics as well, or was this new for television?
I'm not familiar with all of the What If series, because like Dave says, it goes back to the 70s and it's had a staggered production. It hasn't been published consistently since the 70s. It's stopped and started throughout the years. But I've never seen there's been different What If so-and-so was Captain America instead, but I don't know that I've ever seen What If a Peggy Carter was Captain America story. So I think this one's actually brand new, because we had Peggy Carter, you know, in the first Avenger, we had Peggy Carter in her own series. And then the last time we saw her was cutting a rug with Steve Rogers in a living room somewhere. So, you know, people know the Peggy Carter character, and I think it's a good kind of introduction to what this world is going to be like.
Okay. So, Dave, I've been saving this question for you since I saw the episode, because we went pretty deep into Loki. At the end of Loki, you know,
it sounds so dirty.
We were talking.
Mean, I know he's a bisexual character, Steve, but come on.
Oh, you know, Knocked me off guard here, Dave. I'm trying to get serious into the canon here, and Loki at the end of Loki, you know, there's the.
I'll go into the canon.
There's the. Hold on. Half soundboard must use. Loki, talking about the diverging timelines, and I asked you this specific question: Does the diverging timelines and alternate timelines at the end of Loki, are they partially setting up this What If series to tell some of these alternate stories? And your response was yes. It is possible that we're going to see some of these stories told in or described in What If, and so. That leads me to this character that I was introduced to in What If called the Watcher. This sort of like, it sort of seems like this celestial being that I've seen for 30 seconds on screen that is describing himself as not interfering with the chains of events that are occurring, just watching from afar. Is there a connection at all to be made between the Watcher and the events that are happening in Loki, particularly the time traveling conqueror Kang, that is sort of like the driving force behind everything that's happening in Loki?
I mean, there could be. That's the direction it could go. The Watchers in the comic books are a super advanced race that has dedicated themselves to simply observing what happens in the universe and recording it for posterity, but never ever interfering in events. And of course, the Watcher assigned to Earth, Uatu, U-A-T-U, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's really horrible at adhering to that vow because he's very attached to the people of Earth, and he keeps interfering over time, you know, breaking his vow, if you will, like a bad nun in a convent. But
more of a guideline than an actual vow.
More of a guideline, yes, like parlay in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's more of a guideline than a hard and fast rule. But there's no link that I'm aware of between the race of Watchers and any of these other time traveling or omnipotent beings. Certainly something that could pop up in the cinematic universe, because I think we've shown that the cinematic universe doesn't treat the Marvel universe, I mean the comic books, you know, like a hard and fast guideline that they have to follow. They'll tweak it here and there. But Steve, you have been introduced to Watchers before What If. They appeared in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 at one point.
Oh.
There's a gag, the Stan Lee cameo in that movie is Stan Lee sitting on an asteroid talking to a bunch of people about things that he's seen and observed. And those people that he's talking to were the Watchers.
Fascinating. Okay.
I was going to bring that up, but I actually thought it was Deadpool, but you're right. It was the second Guardians movie. That's 100% right.
So there's another connection that I caught to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and that was the creature, this tentacled creature that the Guardians are battling in the beginning, reminded me of the tentacled creature that Agent Carter is pushing back into the Tesseract, I guess, or the time portal that's opened by the Tesseract that was sort of brought forth by Red Skull. Did you make that connection at all?
I didn't. Dave? I was a little more thinking about a connection to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., to be honest, the Marvel TV series that is not considered canon anymore for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But in that show that did spin out of the movies at one point, Hydra is a big time player in there, and they mess around with extra dimensional beings and inspirations for their power and name. And I was wondering if that was where it came from, or if it was just Cthulhu or something like that, just, you know, coming down to wreak havoc on Earth.
I actually was thinking they may be setting up, and I was completely wrong by it, but I thought they might be setting up what if Thor was a member of Hydra kind of thing, because he talked about bringing people down from the stars. And so I thought that might have been setting up a future episode down the road, but alas, no.
That's cool. I love that there's that flexibility to be able to do stuff like that. It's a lot of fun.
And somewhere at Disney, somebody's going, God damn, that's a great idea. And they're writing that down for season two.
Much better than Space Octopus, right, Alan Moore? Motherfucker.
So the episode is tremendous fun. Great action. The acting is fantastic. Captain Carter, voiced by Hayley Atwell, who plays the actress that plays Peggy Carter in the films. She's also lined up and filming Mission Impossible right now.
And apparently dating Tom Cruise. Talk about Mission Impossible.
Really? Oh, wow. That's a fairly stunning couple.
Let's get back on the couch. Jump all up and down.
I love her. I've always been a big fan of Bradley Whitford's. Mm-hmm. Of course, Josh Lyman on the West Wing and so many others.
Josh Lemon Lyman.
LemonLyman.com.
You know, I think that's the pleasant surprise to this series for me is like it's not and not to disparage voice actors that are out there because they're all hardworking folk. And there's a lot of very, very good ones that are out there, including, you know, most famously, Mark Hamill has probably made a bigger career out of voice acting than he has out of acting, you know, the past 20, 30 years. But they got most of the main cast back. So it's really easy to have all those familiar voices. Hayley Atwell, you know, Dominic Cooper is the young Howard Stark. Sebastian Stan is Bucky. Who else did I recognize in there? There's somebody else that I'm missing in there as well. Oh, Stanley Tucci as the Doctor. Mm-hmm. All those guys are the same guys that were in the first Avenger movie, Captain America. No Chris Evans though, and probably no Hugo Weaving because he apparently hates this role. So I'm just guessing.
I agree entirely.
So there's a really cool connection actually with one of the voice actors that I found to Star Wars, which is really interesting. So Red Skull was, by the way, super awesome in this episode. Love the character Red Skull. Voiced by Ross, listen to the last name, Marquand.
Oh.
Who played Aaron on The Walking Dead.
I was going to say, isn't he on The Walking Dead?
Yep.
My mind, Steve.
Distantly related to Richard Marquand, who, of course, directed The Jedi.
I thought you were going to say was roommates with so-and-so and then.
Did Ross Marquand also voice Red Skull in the Infinity Game, Infinity War Endgame?
I think he replaced the previous actor.
Yeah, because I know it was not Hugo Weaving at all. Hugo Weaving was Red Skull in the first Avenger and made no bones about that. He wasn't really happy with how everything turned out. If I'm remembering the hullabaloo back in the day. So I know that he did not come back to record anything for Infinity War or Endgame. So I'm wondering if it's the same guy now, but he did a great job. Sounds just like him.
Yeah. I thought he was great. All right. I've got another sort of like foundational question for this particular episode. All right. So we have Captain America. And then we have Captain Carter. Why wasn't it Captain Britain or Captain England?
Do you want to take it, Dave?
I think that's a fair question.
Okay.
I think Captain Carter does just kind of roll off the tongue more nicely. Mm. And it's possible that they are saving the Captain Britain moniker for a card that they're going to turn over a little later in the mainstream MCU properties. And Greg, I think, has some other insight on that make it into legal rights. I'm just going to throw that out there because Captain Britain was originally published, as I recall, in Marvel UK stuff, which made it a little complicated.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure how the cinematic rights to Captain Britain lay out, but there was an entirely different character that is a Captain Britain. Oh. And he was published, as Dave says, in Marvel UK and then... In America, he kind of got introduced to audiences through the X-Men franchise. And so maybe we see him at a later point. And I don't think you can put Peggy Carter as Captain Britain because, you know, while they do kind of play fast and loose with a lot of the rules, there are things you don't do and making, you know, like you wouldn't make, except for the What If series, you wouldn't make Steve Rogers into Iron Man. You know, you just wouldn't do that. So you wouldn't make Peggy Carter also be Captain Britain. Also, she's not fighting for Britain. She's fighting for the Allied forces. Yeah. So she's not, and she's stationed in America. You know, she has nothing to do with fighting for Britain, as it were. So Captain
and
Carter.
It was American technology that made her who she is. Damn it.
Limeys.
Yeah, but the shield, you know, she's flying the Union Jack there. She's not flying the Stars and Stripes.
Maybe. Also, I just looked it up and Ross Marquand did voice the Red Skull / Stonekeeper character in Infinity War and Endgame.
There you go.
Cool.
Excellent.
Cool. I thought it was cool that in the original MCU timeline, to your point, Dave, in the beginning where you said it's like a beat for beat sort of retelling very similarly of the original Captain American story. In the original story, Cap ends up frozen in ice after foiling Red Skull's plot and ends up thawed in 2011. Same fate here for Peggy. She ends up, I guess, sort of teleporting to 2011 and ends up with Nick Fury. And was it who was with Nick Fury in the room when she pops in? Was it
It was Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And that setting was from the first Avengers movie where Loki is using the staff and the Tesseract.
Yes.
In the movie. Like there's a lot of stuff that they beat and lined up with. And the train sequence where Sebastian Stan's character in First Avengers killed and becomes the Winter Soldier, that sequence was pretty spectacularly done, including where he almost falls from the train at one point and Captain Carter rescues him. And he's like, wow, you almost ripped my arm off. And it's the arm that is the mechanical arm for him going forward. And then Steve Rogers is the sacrifice at that point on the train instead of Bucky. They turn everything so well. And to your point about Steve Rogers would never become Iron Man except in a what if story. Yes. But it was such a well done bit here to demonstrate that what made him successful as Captain America is that he was Steve Rogers. It was the heart of Steve Rogers as a hero, not that he's suddenly a souped up superhuman.
Yes.
That moment in the show when Steve Rogers in the early Iron Man gear fell off
the Hydra Stomper.
I thought, ooh, are they going to twist this so that Steve Rogers becomes the Winter Soldier? But then I guess, I don't know, was my timeline off there? Like, does the Winter Soldier come?
No, Winter Soldier comes later, but that's really the genesis of the Winter Soldier. Bucky falls injured and he is picked up by the Germans and, you know, becomes a test subject from that point forward. So yeah, this replaces Bucky in that role. And that's the cool thing about kind of this what if series is you can, you know, there's all these kind of jumping off places that you can pick up on that they purposely throw out there, you know, teasing, you know, what the Red Skull's, you know, supernatural hero is going to be, picking, you know, who the Winter Soldier is going to be. Those are all the cool things about this show.
Right. Right. Howard Stark, he creates the Iron Man costume for Steve, and that is Howard Stark the father
of Tony Stark.
Tony Stark. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I didn't know the lore there. I didn't realize that Howard.
It's confusing that, because there's been two different actors to play Howard Stark in the franchise. Yeah. So, Dominic Cooper only played Howard Stark in the first Avenger. It was that guy from Mad Men who's played him in every other appearance. So it looked
okay.
If you're Dominic Cooper, only, it's confusing.
Yeah, Dominic Cooper also played Howard Stark in the Agent Carter TV show.
Yes, good pull.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And the guy who was Jarvis the Butler, the real Jarvis the Butler, appeared in the Agent Carter show and also was still the chauffeur in Endgame with the new Howard Stark, John Slattery, as well.
All right, got it.
There'll be a quiz later, Steve.
I'm just exploding Steve's brain because not only fake characters taking different roles, real actors crossing over.
There's some stuff I can't track. It's just too much. Just like, got it. Okay, moving on. What did you think of the animation? I know that Nico on our thread earlier was asking me to ask my kids about it. What did you guys think of the animation style?
Dave's going to start because he's just chopping at the bits.
I was going to say that wasn't Nico. That was me asking you to ask your kids. Oh, what?
I apologize. I thought that was Nico. Sorry.
You can't expect him to keep anything straight.
Dave. I thought it was Dave that was asking me to ask my whatever.
Nico does a lot, but I'm just saying, like, wait, that was my question. Wait a moment.
Sorry.
But I enjoyed it. I mean, a lot of the Marvel animated stuff that's come out has been more aimed at the kid demographic. So the animation is more of a traditional kid style animation. And by that, I mean, you know, something that's akin to a Saturday morning cartoon show like we all grew up on and I don't think exists anymore. But this was a bit more of a stylized, a little more sophisticated. I mean, it's not like an anime style or anything like that, but they did a lot more with the backgrounds are treated a certain way and the action kind of moves in ways that aren't specific to the artistic rendering in that point in time. And I thought it was really, really good. And I greatly enjoyed it. And I'm glad that they did the gear shift. Like that was one thing I was concerned about when they said it was going to be an animated series. And I'm like, oh, is this going to look like the, you know, Marvel Adventures animated series from like 5 years ago? Because if it is, that's not going to be that interesting to me. But this is
or the 90s X-Men, which you can relive in all its glory on Disney Plus as well, which are a terrible animation style, but they are I legitimately like fun stories, so I can't disparage that show too much because they are super fun. I loved it. I'm a big fan of the old like Max Fleischer Superman series from the 40s.
Great.
And this reminds me of exactly of that one, because the time period you're dealing with the mid 40s at this point. You know, I think the first Avengers set place starting in 43. And this takes place at the same time, obviously. And so them using all of the shadows, all of the not super defined characteristics of the people like Dave was referring to, I thought it was just fantastic. I thought it looked great. I thought it fit the time period. I don't think you carry this style of animation throughout the entire series, because again, this is kind of specific to this hero and this story and this style of story that they're trying to tell. But I thought it was fantastic. It looked like the old Fleischer series of Superman cartoons, and I'm a huge fan of those.
I agree. It pulled me in immediately, and it felt like something out of the 40s, but with a very modern twist and take. And after 30 seconds, I kind of just forgot that I was watching animation altogether. I mean, it just, I got wrapped up in the story part of it and just kind of allowed myself to get lost in it. And I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was just brilliantly created, produced. The sound quality is wonderful. The music is great. So much tender, loving care is being put into this so far after one episode that I'm really excited about the next one. I can't wait for Wednesday and to see what's in store. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, guys, we got to get out of here. Let's wrap this up. Guys, I was looking online to see what's in the or on deck. Episode 2 is titled, "What would have happened if T'Challa and not Peter Quill was picked up by Yondu as a child and became Star-Lord?" So that'll be interesting. That drops August 18th.
That might be Chadwick Boseman's final Black Panther performance.
And then episode 3 sounds really fun. "What if Loki presented himself to the Earth government as King of Asgard using all his diplomacy?" We'll see what happens there.
I welcome our new Asgardian overload.
And is this a 10 episode season or 9? I'm not sure.
I think it's 10 episodes.
Okay.
I have no idea.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Anybody watch The Suicide Squad? Any HBO Max subscribers watch The Suicide Squad? Or go see it in the theater maybe? Anybody?
No.
I will be doing that probably tomorrow.
It's very James Gunny. I will just
That's
put it
I'm
that
hoping.
Way.
That is yes. What I'm hoping for, sir.
Have you been?
You will not be disappointed then.
Excellent.
So it's on HBO for HBO Max subscribers, or you can see it in theater right now.
Correct. Yeah, it's not like the Disney Plus where you have to pay extra for it. You can just watch it right now. But yeah, if you were expecting it to be more Suicide Squad, less James Gunn, or more James Gunn, less Suicide Squad, then the latter is the option we're going to be going with.
Got it. All right. The other thing we need to get to eventually is Scarlett Johansson. What's going on with her character?
Oop.
Yeah, right. Sorry. I guess Bob Iger might have something to say about that.
Who? I don't know who this Scar Johansson. Why are we hiring Swiss people? We don't need the Swiss.
Guys,
just taking the jobs Americans don't want to do, Greg.
Exactly.
This was fun. I expect we will be together next weekend for episode 2. Until then, have a wonderful week. Leave us a text message. And may the Force be with us all.
Did it come from Lucasfilm?